I believe Bitcoiners have this in common. They recognize that they have undertaken a near hopeless task, creating a global, neutral, apolitical settlement medium and standard of value will not happen overnight. We have barely begun the project. We are only 12 years in. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. Happy 12th birthday to the Bitcoin white paper. And you know, a lot of people are saying that this is Bitcoin being 12 years old. And if you listen to any of the previous Bitcoin birthday episodes, you know that I consider it the Genesis block. This is the conception of Bitcoin. That is what the Bitcoin white paper is. Bitcoin Genesis block is Bitcoin's birthday. So I do not agree. This was not Bitcoin's birthday on Halloween 2020. This was 12 years since the idea of Bitcoin was released to the world. However, Nick Carter, who we just read his excellent piece, The Last Word on Bitcoin's Energy Consumption, last week, released an article yesterday, Bitcoin at 12. And it is a great piece, and that is what we are reading today. Real quick, before we do, a shout out to our sponsor, Hexa Wallet. That's H-E-X-A. And for everybody who's been using the wallet, they just had an awesome update to the wallet that makes it feel so much smoother and more responsive. I thought it would be rather minor when they said performance improvements, but on iOS, it literally feels like a whole different wallet. And they said that there is more to come. So for everyone who has it, go ahead and update and shoot them any feedback for the next version that they've got around the corner, because this thing is getting really, really streamlined, and I'm super excited about this because I've started using this quite a bit, because with the high fees and the drop in the hash rate, the batching is really, really hard to beat now. So a huge thanks to Hexa for supporting the show and for working their butts off in making their mobile wallet even more awesome. So check them out at hexawallet.io. But with no more delay, let's go ahead and get into Nick Carter's piece. Just after the 12th anniversary of the Bitcoin white paper, Bitcoin at 12. 12 years ago today, on Halloween 2008, exactly 491 years after Martin Luther nailed his theses to the door of Wittenberg Castle Church, the idea of Bitcoin was born. More accurately, you could say it was baptized. The network itself wouldn't exist in a truly live and peer-to-peer fashion until the following January. Block 1, the first, quote, true block, was mined on the 9th, and digital cash pioneer Hal Finney received the first transaction on the 10th of the month. The idea of digital cash had existed previously, of course, as had cash-like schemes based on computational work. But this specific scheme, capped supply, not dollar pegged, many of the early digital cash ideas relied on maintaining a dollar peg, running on a peer-to-peer network based on a shared ledger with minting through proof of work, was new. And so Satoshi had the privilege of naming it. When you create new things, whether they are fictional characters or nation-states, you get to name them. In some cases, merely discovering things endows you with a nominative right, but it's unambiguous that inventors get to christen their inventions. This matters, because October 31st, 2008 was the first time Bitcoin's core qualities were sketched out and paired with the name. This makes the system known as Bitcoin rather specific. It's not simply a generic name assigned to the first successful digital cash implementation. It's the name that Satoshi bestowed upon a system with a predefined monetary schedule, 21 million units, based on proof of work, and so on. Other digital cash systems have existed and will exist, but this one is special, and it's opinionated. It's not just a way to move value through a communications medium. It's an entire monetary manifesto, an affront to the fiat system. Bitcoin has often confused people. It is perhaps one of the most misunderstood phenomena of the last decade. If you lack sufficient ideological and historical context, you most likely consider it a complete boondoggle or a bizarre, unnecessary waste of computing power and effort. This is the default position. Most people in the West rarely give any thought to monetary policy or banking. Why should they? Their currencies depreciate at a slow, barely perceptible rate. Their bank arrangements work fairly well, and they don't find themselves frozen out of the financial system too often. Of course, this isn't the reality for the majority of the world's population, who suffer under inflationary regimes or politicized and untrustworthy banking systems. But the views of American coastal elites are far overrepresented in the discourse, so the press is replete with confused assessments of this purportedly useless monetary scheme. But understanding the purpose of Bitcoin is itself a shibboleth. If you don't get it, it's probably not meant for you. Even among acolytes, Bitcoin's true nature is hard to pin down. It's a fast-settling payments and settlements network, which led people to believe it would be suitable for petty cash-style payments on the internet or even at brick-and-mortar points of sale. It's a highly available, replicated, and consistent database, which led many to envision it as a tool for the storage of arbitrary data. It's highly innovative and relies on new discoveries and improvements in computer science, cryptography, and peer-to-peer network, yet it is perceived as antediluvian, a relic almost. These contradictions are core to the nature of Bitcoin. Something unowned, with no one to speak for it, will appear multitudinous in the minds of its users. It is a glittering prism, refracting the opinions of observers, spitting out radically different visions of itself based on their perspectives. An endless time horizon. Recently, the great monetary historian George Selgin pointed out that Bitcoin was unlikely to displace the dollar anytime soon because monetary network effects are incredibly powerful and enduring. And I fully agree. The difference between us is simply one of time horizons. I am willing to be patient. I believe Bitcoiners have this in common. They recognize that they have undertaken a near hopeless task. Creating a global, neutral, apolitical settlement medium and standard of value will not happen overnight. We have barely begun the project. We are only 12 years in, but we have made some great progress so far. So we push forward. What's the measure of a healthy society? Arguably, it's a willingness to undertake long-term projects whose completion their originators will never live to see. Virtually anything worth building takes time to build. Enduring institutions don't come easy. The cathedral is not the stones that compose it, nor is Bitcoin the blocks. The cathedral is the physical embodiment of a singular idea. Something greater exists. Its greatness makes you feel small and reminds you of your place in the universe. We modern folks who trivially fly through the heavens for the price of 1/10 of a day's labor still find cathedrals imposing and sublime. Imagine how a medieval peasant would have felt in the somber coolness of the great hall. The spires towering above him, the tallest building he would see in his lifetime. The sun's light filtering through colored glass, revealing an array he would never witness anywhere else. All of it painstakingly built not for vanity or commerce, but for the glory of God over generations and generations. Fathers and sons and grandsons toiling over the same edifice. My university years were spent studying philosophy at St. Andrews, a small town on the east coast of Scotland. St. Andrews was the site of a cathedral constructed to house the relics of Andrew the Apostle, the patron saint of Scotland. The diagonal white cross on the blue background, the one seen on the Scottish flag, the saltire, represents the cross upon which he was crucified. For 158 years, starting in 1160, thousands of stonemasons, laborers, and townsfolk labored with hand tools to build a suitable container for these holy relics. Only a tiny fraction of the people who poured the whole energy of their lives into this magnificent building would ever see it completed. For the rest of them, knowing that they were working on a sublime civilizational project was enough. They were happy to submit to a vision far greater than themselves, rising above their transient concerns. This was the height of culture, beauty, and technology at the time. What more could one hope to live for? It is virtually impossible to set foot in an ancient cathedral today, 1,000 years old, without contemplating the sheer human effort expended to place every last stone and every last pane of colored glass. It's a monument to and a digest of the embodied work sunk into those ancient stones. The Satosian Critique. Martin Luther had 95 critiques. Satoshi had, effectively, one. Satoshi's animus lay with the centralized nature of banking, credit, and base money itself. Quote, "The root problem with conventional currency is all the trust that's required to make it work. The central bank must be trusted not to debase the currency, but the history of fiat currencies is full of breaches of that trust. Banks must be trusted to hold our money and transfer it electronically, but they lend it out in waves of credit bubbles with barely a fraction in reserve. We have to trust them with our privacy, trust them not to let identity thieves drain our accounts." Satoshi Nakamoto. Martin Luther sought to reform the church, to return it to a truer, earlier state. Aside from presenting us with a rubric and then a first implementation of a system, Satoshi was not as forthcoming. The Bitcoin white paper is probably one of the most semantically dense documents in history. Not a word is wasted. Satoshi was famously terse on forum posts, only sparingly opining on the political and economic objectives of the system. The blanks have been left for us to fill in. And we have been doing so with gusto. Bitcoiners, through the mechanism of novel technology, seek to restore a monetary arrangement of the past. Bitcoin is a new technology designed to pursue Baroque ideas. It harkens back to the era of sound money, in particular the harmonious period from 1880 to 1914, when the international order was largely united on a gold standard and free trade flourished. In the minds of Bitcoiners, we sit at an epical turning point. With any luck, future historians will speak of the Bitcoinist Restoration, which reversed the losses suffered in the fiat interregnum of 1971 to 2020. I call it an interregnum because a fully fiat standard is a historical anomaly rather than the default. In this manner, Bitcoin can be understood as revanchist or restorative. We are reclaiming lost territory, discarded ideas, and lost time. Some critics allege that a Bitcoin standard mirroring the one supported by gold is unoriginal and trite, that a Bitcoin standard would suffer the same failures. Why bother revisiting failed monetary arrangements of the past? But Bitcoin, being a dematerialized monetary commodity, is new and distinct from gold. These critics fail to grasp its superiority over classical monetary technologies, which should give a Bitcoin-centric system more robustness. It's more auditable, meaning that banks and deposit-taking institutions can be held accountable by their users. It's cheaper to verify, requiring only basic computer hardware. This globalizes and democratizes the monetary system. Anyone can participate, not just a large institution with the resources to safeguard large quantities of gold. Unlike gold, it's trivial to take physical delivery of the asset. This means that users have a free choice between self-custody and an intermediated approach. This permanent optionality. In the worst case, I can take physical, final ownership of my own assets, is an incredibly powerful feature that tilts the balance of power towards the individual, away from the state or corporate oligarchs. It's about time the pendulum swung back. Even where service providers are involved, competition for depositors is fierce. Closing your account at a Bitcoin bank is as simple as withdrawing your coins and depositing them at another. And it's programmable. Sophisticated conditions can be encoded directly into transactions. This is a design space we have barely begun to explore. The immediate concern is the integrity of the network, which is why system-wide upgrades require such careful vetting. There is likely no open-source project on Earth that has witnessed as much scrutiny as Bitcoin. It is a $250 billion bug bounty, after all, so we move slowly but deliberately. People sometimes ask me what Bitcoin means to me, and this is my best attempt at an answer. Bitcoiners who earnestly believe in a better monetary world and aren't afraid to bring that reality to bear are the equivalent of masons and laborers working on a monetary cathedral which they may never see come to fruition. But this is okay. As long as we believe in a big, audacious vision, believe that there is still beauty in the world, and that there remain great things worth striving for, we will succeed and inspire. Today, I can't imagine anything else I'd rather be working on. I couldn't be happier to devote my career and energy to the vision laid out by Satoshi 12 years ago. The Satoshian critique is true, and it is continually reinforced as established monetary authorities grow more erratic and capricious. The instantiation of a stable, Bitcoin-based monetary system is by no means guaranteed, but it becomes more plausible by the day. I don't know if I will see the completion of this project, or even if it will work in the long term, but that doesn't bother me. I'm focused on placing the next brick. Nick Carter, October 31st, 2020. Nick always has some good pieces, and I couldn't have said it better myself. For something on the Bitcoin white paper's 12th birthday. And God, it really hits home a couple of like the key ideas. And one of those that just really just hits so much of what's right or what's so focused and cohesive about the Bitcoin perspective is the time horizon that we are building this on. This is our Great Pyramid. This is our Great Wall of China. This is our cathedral. This is not about getting as many gadgets as possible as we can have to be as shiny as possible so that we can catch as many eyes as possible. This is about building something that survives the test of time. Something that lives beyond us, that doesn't have to be replaced again to solve the problem of constantly replacing broken monetary system after broken monetary system. And I love that quote towards the beginning of this is, what is the measure of a healthy society? Arguably, it is a willingness to undertake long-term projects whose completion their originators will never live to see. Virtually anything worth building takes time to build. Enduring institutions don't come easy. Such a good quote. And it's such a perfect way to frame the difference between high time preference and low time preference. Like our entire society has been poisoned by the money that we have. And it is literally poisoned to the culture and the perspective of the people within it. We are a completely high time preference society. Everything is about tomorrow and next week. And as soon as you're looking out a couple of months, it's like, oh, we'll just push it down the road. Who gives a shit? We'll pay for it later. And you know, we'll get the benefits of it today. And long-term projects aren't even considered. It's because the twisting of our money, the manipulation of our money is so great, we have no time to stop and think about the great things that we could build with a long enough time horizon. Instead, we're literally just chasing the next tiny percentage so we simply don't lose what we have already created. People so grasp the idea that we're stuck in a hamster wheel, that we are just running and going nowhere, and people do not comprehend the problem that that hamster wheel is built out of fiat money. It doesn't naturally exist. It has been constructed, and we are being forced to run on it. This is a problem we can solve. And not only that, we know how to solve it. We have historical precedents for why it exists and what is needed to break it down. Bitcoin is our solution to the hamster wheel. We are trying to fix fundamental long-term problems of society. And the people who think like, you know, oh, we're just going to make the blocks huge and this is going to be a global payment network tomorrow morning. And that, oh, we're just going to keep building tokens on top of tokens and have this giant copy pasta smart contract ecosystem akin to just starting up a website and throwing it out there in a couple of days. Nothing built like that survives for any length of time. The task is just so far past the scope of thinking involved in those projects. It's so hard to even illustrate exactly how bad the framing is there. This is about the integrity of the core functioning of the system in the face of the greatest any perceived possible adversary on the planet. You don't throw that thing together like website JavaScript. You build it over decades and you move very slowly and very deliberately. And in doing so, we could really solve just a seemingly impossible problem, something that historically you would have to assume, looking through history, is just an impossible thing to solve. It's just a natural cycle of failed systems from the past. Like, money is corrupted, period. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. History is not even slightly ambiguous about that fact. And yet, something may literally have been built, something may very well exist for us today that we can extend, that we can build on and teach to other people that could break that cycle. Something that fundamentally works differently. And to have been met with potentially the greatest opportunity we could have been met with, the fact that we are in a fourth turning, that this landed on the global stage where it did, that 30 years of cypherpunks trying to build this out finally succeeded in laying the genesis block of this thing in 2009. And that it is our job to treat this thing carefully and keep it alive. To treat that carelessly is foolish beyond belief. We're not building a PayPal. We are trying to solve the core monetary problem of the past few centuries. And if we can, solve it for good. This piece just really hit the nail on the head when it comes to the analogy. And it brings me back and reminds me of A Most Peaceful Revolution, his other piece that I just think is just spot on with why we are here and what the difference is between this and everybody who thinks they've got a faster app. It just is a whole, it like the mindset and the scope of the problem could not be more completely separate worlds than they are. A quote that we're working on a monetary cathedral which they may never see come to fruition, but that is okay. As long as we believe in a big, audacious vision, believe that there is still beauty in the world, and that there remain great things worth striving for, we will succeed and inspire. And that's one thing about Bitcoin and the ideological vision of this just crazy project that's discounted a lot. Like, it is an unbelievable source of hope and inspiration. It puts you in line with a future that is far out and looks past all this bullshit that we are stuck in today. And it is such bullshit. It is so meaningless. And anybody who tells you otherwise is just lost in it. They are just swimming in it. Just step away. Find something real to build and something that's actually sustainable for the future. That is why we are here building on Bitcoin, because it's the only thing that makes any sense. There's no solution in the election between two idiots on a completely lying and biased media, whichever one, pick your choice. You know, it's so meaningless and high time preference, and it is a solution to nothing. Focus your life and time on something real. And just as Nick Carter said, I cannot imagine a better thing to devote my time and my energy to. And for all the frustrations and the challenges and the fears, these are the only bricks worth laying. So I'm right here with him. And it's exciting to have you guys along for the ride. So thank you for listening. This has been Bitcoin at 12, again by Nick Carter. One of the just greatest, like I always get jacked reading Nick Carter stuff. And we got another piece by Breedlove actually coming hopefully tomorrow, fingers crossed. So stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss it. It is another fire freaking episode. And another shout out to Hexawallet for bringing these to you, for supporting this show and supporting this vision of the future and building the tools, we got brick and mortar and we need trowels and we need mixers. We need everything to put this thing together. And those are the wallets. Those are the testers. Those are the new protocols. Those are the people building out and trying to make the new standards work. Those are the people fixing the bugs and making these things more streamlined and making them user-friendly for somebody who doesn't know the ins and outs and all this stuff. There's a million things to build. And for those that can build the things that I cannot thank those people enough. And I've really been trying to donate more to development and to specific pull requests and things, like on Bitcoin Axe, that's ACKS.com. That's just a really great place to support people and, support people to build out specific projects. There's so much going on Lightning. I hope to actually be more directly involved in trying to get specific things built and open sourcing them for at least what little help I can provide. And then, of course, a huge thank you to everyone who supports my work, who supports this podcast, and like Hexawallet, my patrons, and everybody else in helping to bring all of the ideas, the history, the philosophy behind this insane new system that we are building, this new cathedral, and making all of this accessible to as many people as possible. Because damn it, if there was ever a time when we needed something just like this, now is the time. Hopefully you guys appreciate this show. And much love to Hexawallet for the update that they just dropped. Really, really impressed. Straight kudos to those guys. Check them out at hexawallet.io. Again, so many features packed into this wallet. Seedless, non-custodial, doesn't require account or any information, simplest batching you have ever seen, a simple contacts list, multiple accounts with varying degrees of security, custom fees, and more to come. So check them out at hexawallet.io. And for anybody else who wants to support this show or become a patron or jump into the Audionauts Telegram crew and help keep this show alive, you can do so at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy. Or you can just donate at guyswan.com. There's some donation options at the bottom, where you can donate to my Hexawallet. At, like I said, there's a donation account that you can create, and they give you a little, a really cool little web front end. It's at guyswan.com/donate. And if you do, shoot me a link or hit me up on DMs on Twitter and let me know. Give me the invoice and I will add you to the Telegram crew so that you can be one of the Satoshi's Audionauts. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Let's keep building this thing. Let's stay focused. We have a wild, crazy ride ahead of us. Bitcoin is just at the beginning, but the walls are beginning to come together, and we can see just how magnificent the thing we are building truly can be. So thank you to Nick Carter for this amazing piece. Thank you to Satoshi for the opportunity to be a part of something so much bigger than ourselves. And thank you for listening to Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan, and until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.